That's the great Pharoah Sanders on tenor sax with John Coltrane's Equinox. This is from Sanders' acclaimed 1987 album, O Lord, Let Me Do No Wrong. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Free Your Mind Friday, and a lot went wrong this week. Let's talk about that. Among other things, on Free Your Mind Friday, which is what this is, it's the open forum that we have every week. We devote at least one of our programming days, the entire program, to your thoughts, your ideas, your opinions about the issues of the day, and issues you think are worthy of further consideration and discussion and debate. We do this by calling 888-874-4888, and we begin the discussion. And don't be surprised if you're teamed up with somebody, but the idea is to trade what we are thinking, trade our thoughts, and begin the process of creating community through discussion. From Virginia, we start with Walter. Hello, Walter. You're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. It's always good to speak with you.
Thank you. Same here.
Given the events of the week, you know, as you had said, it's been quite a week, a very tumultuous week. And given the events of what happened in Dallas yesterday, I think it leaves us to ponder as people of consciousness, and particularly as people of color, and even more particularly as African Americans, what can we do to bring about change in this situation? We have seen these events play out time and time again, particularly during the Obama administration, given that there seems to be no protections for people of color from the brutality of police. What had occurred yesterday in Dallas was not justice, it was vengeance. And vengeance is not justice. And that is not a course of action that we want to pursue, because that makes us just as bad as those that we want to bring to justice. So what can we do? How can we
Before you go any further, Walter, can I impose upon you to give us a little context about what happened in Dallas yesterday?
Well, as many people are aware, there were several police officers that were shot during a Black Lives Matter protest. As it was wrapping up, it seemed to be some shooters that had some skill as snipers that took it upon themselves to shoot five police officers that killed them and wounding several others.
Very good. Yes, that's what happened, and the search goes on. Continue with your point, though.
So my point being is, you know, we can always identify the problem, and you've brought this up time and time again, but what can we do as far as the solution? And what we have done thus far is we have protested. We have gone to our congressional representatives. We have made suggestions for community involvement as far as having a citizens action board on local municipalities in terms of dealing with the police. But again, the killings of white police officers and particularly African-American men continues. My proposition is this, and this is something I would hope that maybe you can espouse on future shows, because you brought this up, that African-Americans in particular are giving their vote to Hillary Clinton without anything in return. There is no demand. And my thing is this, if she can show up and be in black churches, come into the black community, and espouse her love and care for the black community, then she needs to prove it. And I think that we need to hold her accountable for it. So my proposition is this, no justice, no vote. That unless there is particular actions in terms of an indictment of these two police officers, three police officers, one in Minneapolis and two in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that basically the African Americans will just stay home in November. We won't vote at all, particularly those that were leaning for Hillary Clinton. Now, since that she needs the black vote to get elected, I think that would get her attention. And since she has the clout and the wherewithal to evade prosecution from the FBI, she can work her machinations behind the scenes to get these officers at a bare minimum indicted, and then with other demands based on, say, insight and counsel from Alton Maddox to have three certain things happen where there is no bench trial for these officers, and that these officers will be prosecuted in the jurisdictions for which these incidents occurred, these killings occurred, so that they can't be weaseled out, meaning that, yes, she does something to get indictments, but then knowing that she can work behind the scenes, that these officers have little to no chance to be prosecuted. And I think that a hashtag and social media needs to go out that would basically proclaim no justice, no vote.
Well, I like your idea of no justice, no vote. It is a very pertinent and I think a very doable, a very achievable goal. But I want to challenge you on something. Even if this were accomplished, you realize that we're taking action with respect to one or perhaps a couple of incidents, but not necessarily tackling a system. Now, I understand that you got to do something, but do you think what your suggestion, it would lead, or does it adequately address the systemic problem and the fact that even with protest, we still need some kind of a political mechanism to create these kinds of changes, and we don't seem to have that right now. So is this suggestion of yours pertinent because you got to take advantage of the moment, and this is a way of doing so, and perhaps it could lead to other things? Or do you concede that maybe even if it addresses the specific situations that you just itemized, it may not necessarily cover a systemic solution.
I absolutely agree with you, and I absolutely thought about that. The Chinese character for crisis also represents opportunity, and that's where we are right now. We've had a crisis in the black community with police brutality for a number of years, and you're absolutely right. We haven't had a systematic approach to basically turn that around. I believe that having the No Justice, No Vote would build an impetus where we could start to build a systematic approach. Because if we get action and if we get results on these particular cases, I think it could start a debate and a groundswell of action around a systemic approach that could work throughout the legislature. Because what she may say as president, what Hillary may say as president is, well, these are state and local types of jurisdictions for which we have no federal authority, and we both know that's a bunch of poppycock. They can do practically whatever they want to do should they choose to do it. So my feeling is that should we push these particular points, okay, and if they are indeed dealt with to our satisfaction, that we can use those as a groundswell to build a systematic solution.
Very good idea, and thank you for putting it on the table for our consideration today, Walter. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, Yitri.
888-874-4888. Desiree from New York, what are your thoughts today?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. Wanted to say that I heard this caller, and I believe, yeah, there needs to be accountability. But I feel like the accountability has to come from all people. And as I talk about what I'm going to talk about, this is not a racial issue. I mean, race is involved. But I think the solution or a possible solution and the goal would be to, let's take off our lenses and look at this as a human thing. Okay, humans shouldn't be dying. This is a problem. And I feel, like I've said before, and I've said this before when I've called, and I say it just personally, that no change will happen unless you're messing with someone's money. Someone's going to pay attention when they see that, oh, you know what? There's groups of people in all shades who are not going to Whole Foods and buying poisonous food. There's a whole group of people who are they're making a choice to, I don't know, take their money out of the bank. There's a group of people who are like, protesting is all right, I guess. But you're really not going to see a change until lobbyists who have money and in our political system, which is corrupt, everybody knows this, until they start losing money. And then that's kind of a sad thing, right? Like,
well,
we're losing money.
I appreciate mm-hmm. where you're going with it in a theoretical sense. Can I ask you, let's say, bridging on to what Walter had started the program with, this idea of something concrete that could be done right now that could lead inevitably to mass movements and so forth, but also drives home the point that it is not enough to just get the solution or to try to get a solution to the specific problem. It is equally important to signal to the system that there is an intention to change the power arrangement, the power equation, so that people register on the system as it is, that they intend to assert their rights. They are not just, brainless people who are governed, but they are part, a very important part, of the governing system here. So if I were to ask you to just tweak what you're saying a little bit and look at, could you tell us from your point of view, what do you see as a workable solution? We know the situation is awful. We see the horrible results of it. And it is not putting us any closer to a solution necessarily. What do you think that solution might be?
I wish I knew the solution. I've asked questions. I'm not a confident person. I don't lead a mass. I don't have any clout. I have nothing like that. But I sometimes wish I could just go somewhere where I know I can get a mass amount of people to hear me and just speak my idea. But you need people who may look at this as a black problem, you know, and you know, people here, they say, oh yeah, all lives matter and stuff, but that's the point of Black Lives Matter is it's not just a black thing, it's how just in one second their lives are taken, when if you just substitute and put in a white person, they're given all the time in the world to rectify and make a choice, and then maybe they get killed. But you need a change in mental state. You need people to say, you know what, black people, there's something wrong with how they're being treated, and I stand up for this, and I stand up for change, because I wouldn't want to be treated that way. How will you get to do that? I don't know. I'm going to keep listening in.
But it's enough, at least, you're developing a consciousness about it and expressing a consciousness about it, and you're making sense of what you are seeing. So that is a very good start, and I congratulate you for that. Thank you so much, Desiree, for your call. Michigan calls us next. Leona from Michigan. Hello, you're on the air, Leona.
Hello, Yatrice, and hello to your PRN audience.
Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Two things. I want to talk about, pick up on something you mentioned last Friday with O.J. Simpson and that situation and why people are so obsessed with him, the system is so obsessed with him. And also I want to talk about the Dallas shooting. But first of all, I need to quote Dr. Frances Kress Welsing, the late Dr. Frances Kress Welsing, because what she has written about and has said and worked on for a lot of her life, most of her life, has to do with what you mentioned with the O.J. Simpson thing, and related to these killings of black men by police, these unarmed black men being killed by police. Okay, I'll be quick. She says, this is no different then from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, where black people were tabulating each time a black male person was lynched and castrated. Castrated meaning genitals cut off. All of this is the same dynamic. It's the fear of white genetic annihilation. Black women do not pose a threat to white genetic annihilation because females, whether they're white, black, brown, red, or yellow, cannot impose sexual intercourse. That's just physiology. Males can impose sexual intercourse. Black people have been the greatest genetic potential. Wait a minute. Yeah, they have the greatest genetic potential to cause white genetic annihilation. And this is why black men have been historically attacked. That's why millions are incarcerated to remove their genetic material from the population. Now, until we can talk about racism, what it is, then we would go into what I am now calling the cycle of insanity. The cycle of insanity is kill a black male. Then black people protest and call in the spokespersons. The ministers come in and pray. Black people put flowers and have a funeral. And then they wait in vain for the court hearing to render justice. The courts don't render justice. Then there is a long pause and the cycle starts again. White person kills a black male person. Black people protest. Call in the spokespersons, black people sing, pray, and shout, and the black people have flowers and a funeral. And then they wait for the court to render justice. Then there's another long pause, and the cycle starts again, because for sure another black male person is going to be killed. I'm still quoting Dr. Wilson. She says, "Now I say the answer is not for black people to be out in the street acting wild, because that military setup that you see is what is being projected for black people. Instigate black people into rioting, and then you cart them off and put them into a concentration camp. What we need to be doing as black people, seriously saying we demand that racism, white supremacy, as the historic dynamic that has been impacting black people's lives, that it be given the same recognition that anti-Semitism for the Jewish people is given, that the same recognition is given to it that is given to women not having their rights, or gays, or lesbians, or the transgenders. All these groups and their specific complaint can be recognized, but black people's specific complaint of racism, white supremacy, the historic dynamic of which slavery was a part, that somehow we're not supposed to talk about that."
Well, I would say this. I recognize the points that you make, and they're quite salient, and certainly Dr. Francis Cress Welsing's points are well taken. However, it still operates within the dynamic of asking for something. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, what are we doing to demand something? All those groups that you just ticked off mm-hmm. haven't been asking for anything.
Mm-hmm.
They mm-hmm. have organized, and organized to the point of political effectiveness that allows them to demand it, to demand whatever it is they believe is required for their sustained existence in this country. I don't recall anybody submitting requests to Congress to that their humanity be recognized, and pleading and begging for the Justice Department to tell the police to behave better. I don't recall them having to do that. Mm-hmm. I know that what they chose to do instead is to fund their own liberation and to organize mm-hmm. with respect to their interests.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes.
That's what we've got to do. This business of running to ask this person to do this and ask the president to do that and ask the mayor to do the other and the police chief, could you please ask the cops to stop killing? No. There mm-hmm. are many communities that don't do this, and they have exactly what they need.
Yes.
But
yes.
It's just the culture of the oppressed in this country, the vast majority of African Americans, Latinos, and other groups, have also internalized their inferiority, and it does not allow them to break free of the notion that they are entitled to act in their interests.
Yes, ma'am.
Organize.
Yes, ma'am.
Organize. This business,
yes, ma'am.
It should be, in this political season, no African-American community should be without some kind of a faction that says, we no way Hillary Clinton. Absolutely not.
Yes, ma'am. You know what? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, no. So
well,
I'm saying...
I agree with you, Latrice. You know what? I'm reminded now, there's no way I can represent what Dr. Welsing has to say, but one quote she made, she says, self-respect is more powerful than a nuclear weapon. Now, these communities that don't go begging, I guess they got adequate self-respect, perhaps. And courage is one of the, is the cousin of self-respect, as I understand. The work of Dr. Welsing.
Well, I want to draw a ready example because you're calling from Michigan. When was the last time you heard of a member of the Nation of Islam being brutally assaulted by police?
Oh, I have not heard that since back in the day when I have not heard that in quite a while. Not since back in the day in California when Malcolm X was living, where they shot the Nation brothers. I've not. Yeah, okay, I'm listening. Go on.
Well, that's my point.
Yes, ma'am.
And they have made it clear. They have made it clear that that's not going to be tolerated in their communities.
Okay.
And they have organized their own system of community protection and community behavior.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That's right. That's right. That's right. They have their code of conduct.
A code,
yes,
of
ma'am,
conduct for all,
yes,
in the community.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's what so, we need to. We have examples of what to do.
Yes, ma'am. Right.
See? And thank you so much for calling, Leona. Good to hear from
you. Well, can I ask you one more question, if you don't mind?
Is it sure?
May I?
Sure, sure. Yes.
You know, I was watching the news broadcast last night, and I'm trying to be more conscious of what the media is laying out. But now, I don't, you know, are we like jumping the gun trying to say that the Black Lives Matter people did this sniper stuff? You know, sometimes those things are infiltrated, but...
They're trying very hard, and some of the news coverage I've seen, to associate this killing of police with Black Lives Matter, and it's being made political hay of, and of course we know that's not true. We know these things. In the aftermath of tragedies like this, we always have to remember that the propaganda machine will go into full effect. All kinds of people and organizations and governmental systems in particular feeding the beast in order to maintain confusion. And so we have to be very careful. If you notice, any time a major thing occurs, I'm not jumping on it right away. Because you know what's happening. What's happening in the immediate aftermath is that there's a huge effort to distract people by feeding them false information. You have to wait for a little while before things begin to fall into place. So don't grab onto what is being put out there as the gospel truth right now. From Connecticut, George, you're on the air. Hello, George.
I think you were right on target what you were just saying, but that wasn't what I was going to talk about, but I just want to make one comment. Back in the 60s, the CIA teamed up with extreme right wings and actually blamed bombings and various atrocities on the communists. Not to say the communists hadn't been doing their own thing, but the thing is, you never know straight up when you see one of these things that if it's a provocateur that's deliberately trying to blame somebody else or trying to get things even worse than they are. So, I mean, we always got to take a closer look and let things fall into place before we really know what's going on that one issue. But what I really called about is that I was thinking about what that earlier caller was talking about, that maybe we should put Hillary up, you know, and this and that. But that is total nonsense. The Clintons have done more destruction in the black community than anybody else. They're the ones who basically went for these mandatory sentencings that put more people in jail, and now denying them the right to vote and destroyed their lives for minor things. They've been involved, and they've shown through this recent letting her off the hook that she's part of the class of people that nothing, no criminality of any sort applies to them. She's part of that elite, while everybody else, for the smallest things, their lives are being destroyed. She brought in with her husband cocaine through Mena, Arkansas, that destroyed not just black communities, the entire country. These are the type of people you want to put your support on, and you want to pray that they're going to somehow bring you a savior or something like that. You just look at the dozens of murders. What about Ron Brown that was the Commerce Secretary?
He
supposedly crashed. I mean, you can go on and on and on. These people are career criminals, part of the system that has been destroying this country, and more so the black community. When I was growing up as a young man, even if black communities were poor in New York or something like, they always dressed well. They always had dignity, and they didn't have drugs. You didn't have the violence you have with the Clintons. They basically offshored us our manufacturing, all our businesses, and took away those jobs. Just ate out the communities so that there was no hope, and these kids would just go to drugs and all sorts of other things. They basically destroyed it. Even if you had a low-level job, every black person had some basic dignity back in the 50s and the 60s, and then they just completely destroyed it. And people like the Clintons with NAFTA, they destroyed it outright. I mean, you can go down the list. I mean, to just think that the Clintons are going to be the saviors? I mean, I can't believe.
I didn't hear that. I did not hear that yet on this program. Nobody said that the Clintons were going to be the saviors. What Walter, our first caller, Walter from Virginia, suggested that what we can do right now, or what could be done right now to drive the point home, especially because this is the political season, and she is basically making the big gamble of being the next president of the United States, that what could be done is the launching of a campaign, a counter campaign, that says no justice, no vote. And that would speak to the political system that we don't approve of what's going on, and we have been asking for a cogent systemic response. It has not yet materialized, and it certainly does not appear to be stemming the tide of these kinds of crimes that are being committed. And perhaps this is a way of exercising and flexing our political muscle in a way that could possibly torpedo her candidacy. So he wasn't saying at all that he supports Hillary Clinton. I didn't get that at all.
Oh, I thought he was implying that everybody should throw in their chips by just putting this pressure on them, and that alone was going to be the hope of that we could get something from it. And I think that is, I mean, with their track record, I'd sooner put my bet on the scorpion that you swim across the river in that old idiom that I'm okay. Please get me across the river. I won't sting you. You know, give me a break. I mean, Gaddafi found that out. He threw his lot in there. The one country in Africa that was becoming a first world nation, he gave up his weapons. And what happened the minute he gave up his weapons? They took his gold. They turned his country into trash. And that's what they're probably going to do to America. Just say the slogan of Hillary should be, we're going to do to America just like we did to Libya. I mean, give me a break.
So let me ask you then, you're telling us what won't work. What do you think will work?
I'm not crazy about Trump. But his formula for the trade situation, I studied trade, that was my major, and I studied overseas, and the Asians basically think trade is another form of war, and they don't play fair. I mean, I can't give an entire economics course in a few seconds, but I can simply put it this way. Even though they have trade rules are supposed to be equal on each side, they never play it fairly. They always find a way to break the rules. So there's no point and sending our jobs overseas and expecting them to give something back. They play the zero sum game. Yes. So if we want our country to grow so that we can bring back those communities, black and white and whatever, we've got to at least get our trade situation in hand. And what most people, if you were listening to the previous show with Gary Noll, that after World War II, we grew ourselves out of our own debt. You can't grow it by completely destroying your manufacturing base. You can bring it back, and you'll see those communities grow, and then you won't have the crime. Then you will have people stop doing the negative things and killing each other. You won't have crazy crazed cops that are ready to kill you because they're so afraid in the community that they just shouldn't even be in a uniform. You won't need those cops because there'll be less crime. You at least get some sane people in uniform. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is that the debt sector is what is having an inordinate impact on policy, domestic and foreign policy in the United States, where people are saying, you know, there's so much money to be made from debt. Individual debt, corporate debt, even national debt. There's so much money to be made from debt. And therefore, debt is encouraged. It's a debt-oriented society because Wall Street has determined this is the way to make a lot of money. Look what happened to the city of Detroit. Just as an example.
Right.
You have an entire city. The calamity, the catastrophe caused to a city and the hundreds of thousands of its residents and inhabitants, the havoc created in their lives and whatnot. And it was all based on one thing. Empty the city, but impose a debt on the city that you cannot pay. You contrive a debt. And therefore, the profiteers come in. And they see you talk about trade. This is a perfect trade-off. You have all this debt to pay. You can't pay the debt, so we take your assets. And in the process, we get a number of other things accomplished. We empty the city of undesirable people, that is, the black people who were living there. We bring in the more desirable people, that's white professionals, and we reimagine the city. But the debt doesn't go away. To service the debt, we know we have you by the throat for a good 50 to 60 years. And we'll be making money. So debt is a very strategic weapon of war. It's used domestically. It's used individually. We have the emergence in the United States, while nobody's looking, of debt peonage. You can be put in jail because of your inability to meet your personal debt obligations. So think about that. Debt is really important. It's not such an undesirable thing as people would think. It is a very desirable thing. Look what's going on in Puerto Rico. A whole island is available because Puerto Rico can't handle its so-called debt.
And
I'm sorry?
I was going to say you're exactly right, and that's how they basically let us put the chains on ourselves so they don't have to have the policemen do it for them. We're doing it ourselves. But who developed this? Wall Street did. And who developed it before them? The Council of 300. And who were the Council of 300? The same people who were running the drug trades for the Chinese in the 1840s and the same people who ran the slave trade and ran the slave trade before they were even black slave traders. That's where Slav comes from. They were running it all the way back to the times when the Slavs were the slaves.
Well, you have a good handle on this thing, but it's really a fascinating thing when you think about how important it is to have debt. Without debt, if everybody basically lived within their means, the country will just go into a tailspin immediately, and it will crumble. If you refuse to use your debt, your credit cards, if you refuse to indebt yourself in order to support a lifestyle, quote-unquote, if you decided that you were going to spend your money in a particular way, you cripple the system. Absolutely. Thanks so much, George. Enjoyed talking to you today.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Well, to hear your voice.
Same here. Good to hear you.
I've really enjoyed listening to your callers and the questions that you're asking, especially you went into this debt issue, because I guess, it made me think about the IMF and the World Bank. A lot of people don't understand it. That's how they leverage these countries who are unable to fend for themselves. And once they sign those contracts, they're done. The austerity does not work. But that's a whole show. That would be a great show. It would be great if you can get an economist on, and maybe they could talk about that. But, this is a sad day. This has been a hard week. But I really like your question about if anybody who's ever grown up around American-grown Muslims or homegrown Muslims, or not that there's a huge difference, but there is somewhat of a difference. There's a certain code of, a certain conduct that is demanded when they live around in your community. They demand a certain way that you act and carry yourself, and they demand that of the people in their mosque. And you don't even have to be a Muslim, but it's just a sense. It's a sense of dignity. And unless you see it, you don't understand. But, you know what I mean. Because if you grew up in the Northeast, you know what I'm talking about. But, you're talking about demands. With some of these officers, I think a lot of times when they discharge a weapon in the line of duty, right, and what happens is that the victim or the quote-unquote perpetrator, their character becomes smeared. They go into their past. They did this. They did that. But I think that what needs to happen is that as soon as the crime scene unit comes out, or there needs to be some type of implementation of immediately upon the discharge of that weapon, very, very shortly after, like hours, the officer needs to be drug tested. Because a lot of these officers are veterans from this ridiculous war, which ridiculous war has been fighting, and a lot of them are on steroids. And, there's things that cause aberrant behaviors. And I think that would make them think twice before they fire. And the other thing I wanted to say is that, the Serpico, we're in a different generation now, but the Serpico phenomenon is alive and well. And if younger people who don't know what I'm talking about, go to the library, read a book, read about Frank Serpico. Right. And
can still give us a little reference point on Frank Serpico and why you are citing him.
Okay, Frank Serpico started off low-rung New York City police, rose up detective, narcotics, and he found that it was just rife with corruption. Back then New York was kind of wide open. The Bronx was crazy, and it was. It was gritty. New York was fun for some people, maybe not so much for others. But the cops were into the drug dealing also, and you could not tell on your fellow officer they would kill you because they were making so much money. I'm putting this in a nutshell, and they did kill Frank at the end, I believe. I could be wrong.
No, he wasn't killed by them, no.
Okay, he wasn't killed. But they made his life a living hell. But where I'm from, every 7 years, there's a scandal. It's like clockwork, even the local paper. Every 7 years, there's a scandal where the narcotics crew, they get busted because they end up being the drug dealers. They're shaking down drug dealers. They got extortion, stealing money, stealing drugs, acting like, quote unquote, I hate to use that word, the T word. I'm not going to use it. But I'm not going to use that. But anyway, Frank Serpico he stood up, and he stood up when nobody was standing up. You see this? And this, you got to remember, this is around the time of the French Connection. This is in the early to mid-70s, right? There was a lot going on. There was a whole lot. Like Nimmo's Pizza, that was a wide pizzeria chain in New York and Philly and Newark. And they were bringing in heroin from Sicily and tomato sauce. So, you're talking like millions and millions of dollars. So, as I said before, probably the same thing is going on now. We can't seem to leave Afghanistan, and we're actually guarding the poppies. And we have this terrible heroin scourge, and And people want to smoke weed because they realize that it works. But, you know, you got people fighting against that. But, no, you know, they'll bring the heroin in. It's a mess. But, you know, it's interesting. And a lot of people, no matter what party, if you're with a party, everyone understands the system and our institutions are breaking or broken. And that is why Bernie was so popular, and that's why the fascist weirdo is so popular. So everybody understands that the system is broken, but we have different ways and different solutions of how we can fix the system. So I think that, and sometimes these things overlap, just like the weirdo fascist, you know, he says things that make sense, but you can't, you know, he'll say anything. He can say anything because it doesn't matter. He's not held accountable. And he's not that bright. And I feel very bad.
Well, actually, I would differ with that. What we fail to realize about Donald Trump is that he has crafted his own system. And therefore, the system has no hold on him, really. He has his own system. It comes to money, he's funding his own thing. He has his own system. When it comes to the party, he has his own system. He's not running by Republican Party rules. He's got his own system. He has organized his own political base. He's not as crazy as people think. He's thought some of these things through quite well. And he knows what would resonate within this apartheid system that we have been living in for so long. He understands exactly what would resonate with the vast majority of people he hopes to cultivate into his political base. And he's done that. So call him a fascist weirdo if you
would. Well, he's a fascist. But see,
he understands the importance of systems and organizing them. And he's done a fantastic, if not phenomenal job at all of this. But people prefer, the media are beginning to see him as, or covering him as if he were an individual. And yet they understand that even though you see one guy, he is a system, an organized system. And that not only catapulted him into orbit, but keeps him there. He even has the option now of saying, hey, I changed my mind. I don't want to run anymore.
That is what I was going to say. Exactly.
He could even do that.
I remember the second debate that when he won, the second debate, he said, oh, I'm greedy, greedy, greedy. And then he caught himself and he said, oh, but I want to be greedy for you too. I love to make deals. Oh, and the undereducated, I love you. You know, yeah. And then people clapped. Okay. And that's fine. He runs on the populist type of mindset. But it's interesting. See, he's made a deal with somebody. He's made a deal that he would wreck the Republican Party, which is fine with me. But I'm old enough to remember the silent majority. You know, that type of ilk, okay? And like you said, it's multicultural now. Now, a lot of people, you know, whatever, they're ready for a change, and they're willing to take a chance with the fascists. But America's always had a tinge of fascism. You know,
they're not taking a chance. This is the point. The man went from zero to Republican nominee in 2 seconds flat. Came from nowhere. If you go back and look at some of the interviews of Donald Trump some years ago, 10 years ago, so forth, where the media actually were prodding him at that time into considering running for president. They recognized in Donald Trump the attributes and traits of a leader. They were prodding him. The media, you go back and see. I've been looking at these old tapes, and in every instance, the interview will include a question about, wouldn't you consider running for president? This is 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw in Donald Trump the actualization, if you will, of what they desire, what the ruling elite wants in a leader. They want a fascist. They want a racist. They want somebody who would be hard and merciless.
Right.
That's what they want. They identified Donald Trump. They are the ones who cultivated Donald Trump years and years ago. He had money, therefore he was qualified. And then we saw that actually manifest itself with the election of Michael Bloomberg as mayor of the city of New York. What were his main credentials? He had money.
He had money. He was rich. Exactly.
And he couldn't buy the office.
And he'll worry about the incidentals later.
And not just incidentals. People, is Michael Bloomberg a sane individual? Is he psychologically sound? That these things don't matter. Is Donald Trump psychologically sound? Is Hillary Clinton sound? They don't care about these things anymore.
Well, that's what bothers me. But see, this is so complex because America has been, we've been dumbed down since the 70s, okay? When they started to take art, gym, and important history out of the schools. People are, unless you work hard at it, people are making a lot of uninformed choices. You know, it's scary because see, I think what set Donald Trump over the edge really to run for president was that correspondence dinner. It might have been 2 years ago when President Obama was making some gaffes at Trump's expense. Okay, and he was seething. Trump was seething. You could see it in his face. And I could almost hear his mind going, "Well, if that so and so can be president, I can be president." And people had already been, like you said, people had already been asking him about it, right?
They've been begging. The media was actually begging this man 10, 15 years ago, begging him, doing everything possible to urge him to be, not just to run for president, but to be, please be president. We need somebody just like you. The so-called liberal press, they're the ones. They're the culprits in this case.
The so-called liberal press.
And
see, that's it. See, I don't even think he knew what a scam the political campaign is. Because if you have enough money to get in, you can make a lot of money. And that's exactly why he didn't want to release his taxes, because he usually works on OPM, other people's money. He's not as flush as we'd like to think.
That formula has worked for a lot of people. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, that formula, the business of... You know, I had said at the time, if you really, really want to jam up people like Jesse Jackson and Sharpton, actually hire them.
They wouldn't know what to
elect
do.
Them to office. If you really want to jam them up, elect
them
to office.
They can't afford it.
They don't want to win. They just want to look like they're interested in winning, because there's so much money to be made. Looking like you want to, like you're serious about doing something to run for office. But there's a lot more money to be made as a wannabe, as a person looking like you're trying to influence something, because money comes flying at you. And they learned that quite well. Jesse taught Sharpton that lesson very well. The last thing they want is to actually be elected, because what does it means they have to work. It means they have to produce results. This is not what they sign up for. They want styling and profiling. That's what you want to want. Curtis Mayfield said, doing the lean, digging the scene with a gangster lean. That's really what they want to do. But they don't want to be elected. They can't afford to be elected, because we will see how actually useless they are in terms of actually producing results. You know, one of the most senior members of Congress will soon be calling it quits. That's Charlie Rangel from Harlem. Been
right.
In Congress for more than 40 years. And guess what? there will be no great fanfare because there will be no great loss suffered. There will be no great loss to him personally. But you look at the utter and complete devastation of Harlem, and you say to yourself, how does the actual situation of Harlem, on any number of levels, economically, socially, politically, how do these things square? Even with the most recent history of Harlem, it doesn't. Harlem doesn't even physically exist anymore. And that is under the watch of one of the most influential members of Congress.
No.
So they're just there as placeholders and very little else. Thanks for coming for your call.
Before you let me go, I just want to say thank you for your expose, the guest you had on that opened the books on the Clintons in Haiti. That was very informative. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, and we will continue. There's more to come. It is mind-boggling how crooked these Clintons are. It is mind-boggling how deliberately the Obama administration just refuses to hold them accountable. And we will be exploring even more chapters of the sordid political lives of Hillary and Bill Clinton. Thanks so much. We have time, do we, for another call? I don't know if we do. I doubt it. Well, here's the thing. This has been a really tough week. And the most important thing when these jarring events occur and we share them as a nation is to keep calm and not subscribe to anything in the way of information just yet. Because in the immediate aftermath of a catastrophe, especially of the types that we are seeing here, there still remains the standing order to twist these things to suit the needs of systems that have nothing to do with justice, have nothing to do even with the truth. These things would be twisted. These facts would be twisted. The information will be incomplete. We will have the light shining in places where the problem is not. And the light not shining in places where it needs to be. So stay calm for a while and make sense of this in your own way. Little by little, the pieces of information will come together and we will know what really happened and how best to make sense of these awful tragedies. We've seen them so many times before. But it also should inform us as to what we are supposed to do. It is not enough simply to be passive observers of these things, but we have to be intelligent reactors. And that means we have to give time for things to fall in place. If you notice the way I function, major things happen, but you don't rush in like you're an expert and you know everything. You won't know everything for a while. That's the nature of these kinds of crimes and events. Because there are many actors, and they have all different kinds of reasons for interest in and involvement in these things. We just learned today, for example, there was a young man whose picture was plastered all over the place, all over the air, as a suspect. And he isn't. Now, it may just be in the way the media operates, because they get all of their information from the police, It may just be that the media would just dismiss this and say, well, oops, and they move on. In the meantime, this young man's life may be threatened. It may be that his career is finished. You never know. It's a technical slip-up, but it's a devastating effect on his life. He's not at all connected with the shooting of the police officers in Dallas. So you have this kind of thing happening a lot. And we have to be very, very careful. And we should really look at this, not just in the immediate moment, but what it says about where we are as a country. And what it says about the degree to which these oppressed communities are almost totally without political respect and protection. We got to do it. It's our job. It's what we have to do. If we call ourselves concerned people, progressive people, activists, we have to do these things. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I want to thank you for the consistently high level of participation and the bravery with which you share your thoughts and the willingness with which you share your thoughts and ideas on Free Your Mind Friday. It really does a great deal of good, and it is a great compliment to the program that we are together in this and at this level. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com, and as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you on Monday. Bye-bye.